Hey, you scaredy cats. Welcome to the Haunted Library. We're your hosts, Sherry.
And Ryan.
So it's September. It's actually feeling really cool outside tonight. So you know what that means. Fall is officially here. I don't care about the people that are like, fall doesn't officially start until September 22nd. No, they are incorrect. I mean, technically they're right. But September vibes start September 1st for me. So wrap yourself up in your coziest sweater, grab a pumpkin spice latte or your favorite fall beverage, and get comfy because we're about to share with you some of our favorite spooky fall reads.
Ooh, I'm excited for the season.
Me too. So why? Because is fall your favorite season?
I would probably lean a little more towards just flat out winter being my favorite season, but you know, as far away from the sun as I can get. But that fall just makes me so excited. I feel like my seasonal depression comes when spring is here and it gets warm, and then and then when September, October rolls around, it's like I'm excited. I'm in a giddy mood.
Nice. So like fall is like Christmas Eve for you, like leading up to winter?
Yes. Yeah, leading up to Halloween.
Nice. Yes, there you go. So what are your favorite things to do in fall?
The same stuff that I do in the summer. Which, you know, because, you know, I'm in a lot of like book spaces online. So I see people now, they're starting to say, we're starting to get a lot of people asking for recommendations for horror books because it's like, it's my 1 month of the year that I can read a horror novel. Yeah. So can give me some recommendations. And it's like, oh, well, I guess I'm not really celebrating because I do it all year round.
It's true. I know I have friends that every October say, okay, Sherry, I need some recommendations for some movies to watch. And I need some recommendations for some books to read. And I'm just like, first of all, I can't do anything super extreme or scary because I feel like they'll never come to me for a recommendation again. But I slowly try to ease them in. And I think this year maybe we'll go a little scarier for them.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's my favorite. Like, I read horror and watch horror all year round, but I love, like, there's something about reading in fall that is my favorite. I like reading outside in fall and having, like, a blanket on.
Yeah.
And, you know, kind of reading that way. But even just, like, kind of laying on the couch and reading and, like, cup of tea. It's just, like, there's something just so cozy about it.
Mm-hmm.
Summer reading has a very different vibe than fall reading.
Yeah. I feel like with the heat, there comes a pressure, if you will. And like, there's like a pressure to be productive when the weather's nice. It's probably like just in our genes to behave this way. And then when the weather starts to cool down, we get sort of like hunkering down where it's like we're getting ready to move into this period of immobility.
You're probably right, though. It probably is built into us, like genetically to like you need to do, you know, you need to do all the things you have to do in the summer and then it's time to hibernate. Yeah.
I wonder if like in, you know, like the primitive days, if they were like, well, it's getting cold out, so I'm just going to stare at this cave painting and get like really cozy and stare at these symbols
in front of the fire. Maybe. Aww. We just have to see if we can find like, you know, pictures of pumpkins in those cave drawings.
Yeah.
Somewhere. So why don't you tell us a little bit about how we're going to tackle this episode, because we're not doing, you know, our usual like one book or talking about a specific author. We're kind of doing something a little different.
Yeah, it's kind of like a general rundown. So we decided to divide it up into different subgenres, which is how we're going to list our favorite books in each subgenre. So we'll start with, what are we doing? We're starting with ghosts, and then we'll do a slasher, vampires, cults or witchy books, and folk horror. And do we have, oh yeah, oh, wow, we have a lot of categories.
We do have a lot of categories.
And we're going to each pick a favorite classic and then kind of like a YA horror novel and nonfiction.
I love it. That is a lot. I didn't realize how many we actually picked.
Yeah, that is quite a bit.
It is quite a bit. But we're not going to go into great detail about each book. We're just going to kind of give you a quick snapshot of why we love them, why we think that you should read them. Yeah, so there are going to be no spoilers here, I don't think.
And also, there will be no Stephen King books on this list, we decided, probably because we spend a lot of time talking about Stephen King.
Yes. Drink. Yeah. There are no Stephen King books on this list. And there's also a book that I think listeners might be surprised we didn't include, but that's because we're going to cover it in October for.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. Okay, so let's start with ghosts. So you and I have talked about this before. Our favorite thing to read is a good haunted house or ghost story. Mm-hmm.
That is one thing that I do change in the fall, because I feel like usually throughout the year I'm not too like set on what subgenre I read, but every time fall rolls around I'm like, okay, I need one of those like classic ghost stories, because mm-hmm. mm-hmm. it's the perfect seasonal read.
Yeah. Okay, so do you want to go first with your ghost pick?
Sure. So I decided to pick Heart-Shaped Box by Joe Hill because I could not pick my actual favorite one, The Haunting of Hill House. That one was off the table. So Heart-Shaped Box, one of my favorite books of all time. And it's one of those books that's like really wild and kind of over the top and a lot of fun. So I read it again, I think for the third time earlier this year, and it had been a while. So I was kind of thinking like, I wonder if I won't like this one so much. But I actually liked it even more. It's like one of my favorite books of all time. So Joe Hill is Stephen King's son, but not Stephen King.
Drink.
And twice. and it is about this kind of a previous rock star, but he's kind of in retirement. His life is just drifting. And somebody sells him online a ghost. And it turns out that he actually does become haunted, and it's just insanely scary. But there's also this really cool personal, like, there's a lot of really great character arcs and character development as the novel goes on, because Jude, the main character, he starts as this like jaded piece of shit, treats everyone around him horribly. Mm. And then like the haunting, the ghost, and this journey that he goes on, it forces him to deal with that.
I haven't read it in a very long time. I do need to read it again. But I know it's definitely, it's probably my favorite Joe Hill book that I've read.
Oh, by far. Yeah. And it's fucking scary. There's one scene in it, and I'm not going to describe it because I would hate to ruin that surprise for anyone. But there's one scene where it's like, even every time I think about it, it just kind of gives me chills. It's like just a really scary book.
Ugh. Yeah. And it's funny because I think for people like you and I, like we've talked before about how we don't believe in ghosts. I think I'm a little more open to it than you are, but I still don't really believe in ghosts. But the fact that, you know, he buys this ghost online, and it feels like something that I could see. Well, I could actually see you being like, this is a hoot. I'm going to do this.
Oh, like, me. I would do that. Yes.
And then you'd end up haunted. See, I wouldn't, because I'd be like, I don't want to tempt fate.
That's the thing, though. And what I love about this book is that it doesn't really go through the classic tropes of a haunted house story. There's no like annoying period where the characters are really skeptical and denying what's happening. It's just like right off the bat, off the walls.
Yeah. Unlike the story that I picked, which is very, very much, I don't want to say a stereotypical haunted house book. But it is kind of your classic haunted house.
Yeah, but that's what I love about it.
Yeah, so I picked The Caro Haunt by Darcy Coates. It is about Remy, who is this tour guide for Caro House. It's one of those, you know, it's probably on BuzzFeed where they're like 10 haunted places to see before you die. And so she is asked to go and host these guests, and they're going to stay for a week, and they're going to research the phenomena happening in the house. And she's excited because she's like, oh, I can like see some, like experience some of these things that have actually made this house famous. And everything's going well, I mean, as well as it can in a haunted house. And then a storm comes in. So you get your dark and stormy night. Their contact is cut off with the world and everything starts to go wrong. And it's just so perfect of a haunted house story, because you know, you've got doors opening on their own, you have seances, you have like a spirit medium who appears to be in a trance. And it's just, it's so good. Because it's just so atmospheric and so creepy. And if you can call a haunted house book or a ghost book cozy, this would be a cozy haunt to me.
It's very cozy.
Yeah.
It feels at the same time cozy, but then there are, it's also like, I feel like the creepiness is really well done too.
Yes, the creepiness is done really, really well. And I think Remy's a great protagonist.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted more. So I've read other Darcy Coates books and I wanted more characters like Remy. I didn't want them to be Remy, although I would totally read a series.
Oh, yeah, I would.
In which she was the protagonist. But there's just something about the Carol Haunt that gets me more than any other Darcy Coates book that I've read. And that's most of the ones that I've read. Actually, in fact, I think all of the ones that I've read by Darcy Coates have been haunted house stories.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. Because I tried a few other Darcy Coates books after the Carol Haunt, and none of them just really hit the same way. I just think it's the perfect combination of everything we love the most about just these classic ghost stories. Because it's, on one end, it is really creepy and it's kind of like, ooh, spooky house. That'd be so scary if it was happening to me. But then on the other side, there's like a cast of quirky characters that all have just nothing in common with each other. And they kind of like banter a lot. And then kind of the more campy aspects that make you think of something like Clue.
Yes.
I think it's just like the perfect balance of those things that make it such a good fall, like welcome to fall read.
Yeah. And then just being isolated right there in this, like this island. And then it's an island. Yeah. Like they can't get off the island. It's got kind of that old, I want to say, and then there were none feel to it without the heavy mystery going on. Although, I mean,
yeah.
There is a bit of a mystery, so.
True.
Okay, so slashers. So mine isn't, my choice, I'm going to count it as a slasher. I don't know if other people would count it as a slasher, but to me it's a slasher. So I picked Dark Across the Bay by Anya Allborn. It is this story, maybe I like houses on islands where like storms hit, because I just realized that a similar thing happens here. So we have this family. We have the mother and father. Then we have their two children, Leo and Lark. And Leo and Lark are teenagers. They've gone through a pretty traumatic experience recently. And their family is kind of falling apart. This is kind of their idea. The mom's idea is like to go to this vacation home. And things are going to go wonderfully. Everybody's going to kind of, you know, mend their relationships. It is in an island in Maine, which, you know, as a Stephen King fan, how I feel about Maine. But cozy.
A setting.
It's perfect.
Yeah.
So Lark is the teenage daughter, and she wants to be a novelist, and she's very kind of awkward and just wants kind of to find her place in the world. Leo has just suffered the loss of his best friend, and he just is so immensely sad. But then things are going to go from bad to worse because they realize that they're not alone on the island. Yeah, that I don't want to say any more about the plot because that kind of covers most of it. But I read somebody compared it to Cape Fear, and it does have that kind of vibe to it. But like right away, the very first chapter, you read it and you're like, oh my God, what is going to happen next? And I was just hooked. It's so tense. And it goes back and forth and plays between the different characters, the different family members, and tells the story from their perspective. And so you get kind of these differing views of what's happening and different people experiencing different things at different times. And it's really, really scary and really, really delightful.
Wow. I haven't read it, but it sounds like really intriguing. Write it down.
I really recommend it. We've talked about this before. I love when the cover of a book really draws me in. And when I saw this cover, I was like, oh, it just looks like it's going to be good.
Ooh. Yeah, it sounds great. So I picked Off Season by Jack Ketchum. And maybe that's something that probably would have fit a little more into folklore. I'm not quite sure, but it does feel quite slashery. So it's kind of like your Friday the 13th premise almost. It's this group of friends. They're, you know, having like a weekend away or something at this remote cabin. And it turns out that not too far from this very remote cabin, which I can't remember how they found out about it, but there has been a family living in the complete wilderness, like isolated, and they're not happy that they're being intruded on, or maybe they just want dinner, I can't remember, but it's this gnarly, gory, incredibly intense book that, and it plays out like a slasher and a home invasion movie at the same time. It's like one of the scariest, if it was a movie, it would be horrifying.
That's how I was going to say Dark Across the Bay also feels like a home invasion novel.
Yeah, that's really scary. That's like, that's full on October reading.
It is. I haven't read Off Season by Jack Ketchum, so I'm going to have to read that.
It's pretty short from what I remember, and there is a sequel. I haven't read it yet, but I've heard that it's actually really good.
Okay, so vampires.
Classic.
I love to watch the Universal monster movies in October, so I had to pick Dracula by Bram Stoker as my vampire novel. Now, some people might be surprised that I didn't pick Salem's Lot. However,
yep,
we made a conscious decision to not pick Stephen King. I don't know if it was actually a conscious decision or we just were like, let's pick other people.
Yeah, it was a conscious decision on my part because talk about him way too much.
We are covering classics as well, but I wanted to highlight Dracula as my vampire pick because it is kind of the quintessential vampire novel. It's probably the first one that people think of when they think of a classic vampire novel. There are others like Carmilla, but this was one of the first vampire novels that I ever read. I think I did read it after Salem's Lot, but then I was like, well, I need to read like more and like find out, you know, where vampire lore started, and you get all of that in Dracula. And I like that it feels very found footagey, and it's told through letters and diary entries, newspaper articles. It's not told from one single narrator, and in fact, there's no single protagonist. Like there are different people throughout that really could be the protagonist of the novel, but we do have, you know, the classic characters: Jonathan Harker, we have Van Helsing, and Dracula, obviously. And it's just such a well-written novel, and it transcends its time. Like sometimes when you read an older novel, it feels very much of its time. And while this does, I think it just transcends it because it's so well-written, and the way that it's written is incredible. I think it really set the standard for vampire lore, and so much is taken from this in other vampire novels.
Yeah, so. Totally. It's been a few years since I've read it, and I know I've been meaning to get around to rereading it, but I remember like really loving it and being into it a lot, especially as someone who doesn't read books that old all the time. It was surprisingly entertaining. And I just wish there'd be like a really faithful adaptation of it, because I feel like Dracula was such a more creepy character in the book than he was in most of the movies I've seen, which hasn't been all of them.
There is one that I watched recently that felt like a pretty loyal representation of it. Like, and it's a Christopher Lee movie, Count Dracula, which came out in 1970. But I think Christopher Lee has this kind of like where he starts out with this older man, and then like when he attacks, he becomes much younger, and it really kind of holds true to that, which I think, you know, Bram Stoker's Dracula does as well with Gary Oldman a little bit, but.
Yeah. Well, I think what it was for me is that, like, you know, in the adaptations, Dracula is always the main character, kind of like how Halloween is just about Michael Myers now. But I really felt like in the book, the group of people that end up killing him, they felt a little more fleshed out, and Dracula was just all the creepier for it, because I remember there were some really great scenes where it's like, is he just around? And that would be creepy enough. He was very menacing.
Right.
And in the movie adaptations, usually kind of they do mean a dirty.
And you're right. I think in the movie adaptations, he becomes more the focus, where like that's not the case in the novel so much.
Yeah, it's good. Okay, so this section would probably be where you get hate on social media, because we're not picking Salem's Lot because we're not doing Stephen King for this list. And I didn't pick Let the Right One In, which would have been my next, you know, logical choice. But I just wanted to highlight a book that I feel like not enough people have read because it's amazing. And that is Fever Dream by George R.R. Martin. And I've never read Game of Thrones. I don't know anything about that series at all. But I read The Skin Trade by George R.R. Martin, which is a werewolf novella. It's in a collection called Dark Visions or something, Night Visions. And nice. So after I read the werewolf novella, I liked it. So I was like, okay, well, I'm going to read this vampire novel now. And it is so good. It's just like an absolute page turner. It has really, really well fleshed out characters that you just really care about. And it's just one of those stories where it's like this centuries old vampire is traveling, and this gruff, miserable, like just grumpy old man somehow crosses paths with this vampire, and they end up kind of becoming friends in a weird way. And that sounds silly, but it's like a really heartfelt novel, and it's like tragic and scary. It's just like classic everything you love about vampires, and a really good book.
I do need to read that one too. I feel like all your picks I haven't read.
Oh no, except Heart Shaped Box.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, so I have to read that. I really like George R. R. Martin, and I have read the Game of Thrones books. And I surprisingly have not read The Skin Trade or Fever Dream. So I've gotta pick those up for sure.
Yeah, they're great. And also Fever Dream, like the vast majority of the book takes place on like steamships racing down the Ohio River or something down to Mississippi. So it's like very atmospheric. The boats make a really good backdrop for the story, like in the same way a good spooky house does for a ghost story.
Oh, I love that.
Cults
and witches.
So I picked, again, this could be on the fringes of the topic, I'm not really sure, but I didn't pick the obvious one, which I feel like is becoming a theme that I didn't notice until now, that we're picking not the one that we would usually pick, but for some reason we went with something else. So instead of Rosemary's Baby by Ira Levin, I chose The Stepford Wives, which I think is actually a more frightening novel, maybe? I don't know. It's really short. Like, you could read it in one sitting, whereas I think Rosemary's Baby is at least 300 pages. But it's just like Ira Levin, everything you love about that story and his writing, it's just like really stripped down to the bare essentials. And, you know, everyone knows the story of the Stepford Wives. They move into this suburban neighborhood where everything's just a little too perfect. And then it reveals that, you know, maybe the wives are caught up into this plot. So it's full of his usual themes, like cults and the husband being a piece of shit and gaslighting. In a way, it's maybe a little bit satirical about just suburban culture that was booming, but right. I think it's just great, and it's scary, and something about his writing just gets you because it's just so blunt and just never stops progressing.
Have you seen the movie?
You know, I haven't. I started it once, and for whatever reason, I didn't get too far, and I've heard bad things about the remake, so I just never watched it.
I have not read the book or seen the movie, but I will have to add that to my list, my ever-growing TBR list. I always see these, like, reading and book memes, and they always get me because I'm like, yep, that's me. Yeah. I'm going to buy a bunch of books this week, and I still have books that I haven't read, but yet that doesn't stop me from buying more books. My pick, and I know you don't like this book, but I loved it, and I found it terrifying, was Hex by Thomas Old Hoyvelt?
Maybe, yeah.
It's basically about this small town called Black Spring in the Hudson Valley. And this town is haunted by the Black Rock Witch. This woman from the 17th century. Her eyes and mouth are sewn shut, and she walks the streets. She can come into people's homes and will stand next to you or next to your children or next to your bed and just stand there. And you, like, it's just terrifying to me. It is absolutely, I remember, I think it's in the very first chapter that you, like, she's in the room and people are like, she's here, but don't pay attention to her. And it just, oh my God, it gives me chills just thinking about it and just picturing her in my head and imagining just, you know, you're like sitting in your house drinking your tea and watching, you know, uh-huh. The Nanny. And all of a sudden, no, you're not getting called out. For some reason, that was just the first show that popped into my head. And she's just all of a sudden there. Like, oh my God, it's so terrifying. But then things get worse. Like, you think that's terrifying, but everything snowballs and people make stupid decisions. And this town that has basically managed to keep this semi under wraps for so long, this town basically goes back like hundreds of years in the way that they deal with things. And it's like, I think that's even more terrifying. It's not, I mean, the witch is scary. The witch is terrifying, but it is the reaction to the witch and what happens as a result of these things that it just awful, awful, but yeah. So good.
Yeah. A lot of Stephen King came through that story.
Do you think that you, if Stephen King had written a story with the same plot, you would have enjoyed it?
Oh, I don't know about that, but it was like, it was like, He drew a lot of inspiration from Stephen King, obviously, and I feel like it, by the end of the book, well, I'm not going to spoil the plot, but it just kind of, everything exploded the way it would in like Needful Things or something, just like a very classic Stephen King type ways. Yeah. But yeah, it wasn't the worst book I ever read. The beginning was definitely creepy.
Right? Like, no. I love it. I think I might have to read it actually again next month.
Yeah, it is very good for the season. Okay, so now folk horror.
So this was a tougher one, I think, because I don't read a lot of folk horror, I don't think. Same. And I think it's also one of those subgenres that is very hard to define, whether you're talking about movies or whether you're talking about books. It's hard to define, but I feel like it's one of those things that when you know it when you read it or you see it.
Yes.
So what I picked was one that I just read called Cunning Folk by Adam Neville.
Have not read it yet.
Well, this could have also fallen in the witch category. So we have this family, Tom and his wife Fiona. They move from the city and move into this kind of rural area. They buy a house. They couldn't afford a house where they had lived previously. So they've moved, you know, into the country too, so that they can have a home and not rent anymore. And it sounds lovely. The home is a fixer upper. Like it's in some pretty rough shape. The previous owner had killed himself. Nonetheless, they got a really good deal on the house. And, you know, with the real estate market as it is, like, you can't pass that up.
Right.
Things start going, I feel like this is the theme. Things start going bad. But they meet their neighbors, and they're this elderly couple who seems slightly off. And Tom almost immediately, even though he has this dream of having, you know, this great relationship with their neighbors, they don't have that. And he even, like, he talks about, you know, how growing up, they always had those neighbors that, you know, you could rely on. But, like, now he doesn't have that. And he didn't have that renting. And that's kind of one of the reasons why he wanted to move into their own home. But yeah. Weird things start happening, and Tom starts having bad dreams, and he witnesses a couple of things that make him really, like, kind of go, huh, what's going on here? And then everything just starts disintegrating because the neighbors are practitioners of black magic, I guess you could say.
Damn. So they're, like, deep in it.
Oh, yeah. And they want to keep him out of the woods, and they want to keep him and his wife and his daughter and his dog out of the woods. And it is, it's terrifying. I've read a couple of Adam Neville books now, and I think this one was my favorite. Yeah.
It seems funny to me that Adam Neville is becoming like the most known author in folk horror right now. It's like he's kind of like specializing in that or something.
Yeah.
Because I have not read any of his books yet, but I did watch The Ritual.
Oh, did you like it?
It was okay. I didn't love it, but I didn't dislike it.
I don't think I've seen it.
And I've heard people say, like, oh, the movie was actually better, and people saying, like, oh, the book is way better. So I don't know.
I would also recommend Last Days, which is by him.
Okay.
Also really good. I found that one, the ending, I didn't find quite as satisfying as the rest of the book, whereas Cunning Folk really held me all the way through.
Yeah.
But, yeah, Last Days is a really good kind of cult novel as well.
Cool. My folk horror pick is kind of, once again, on the fringes of the genre, or maybe it is. I'm not sure. You tell me. So usually my idea of folk horror is that people venture into territory that they're not familiar with, and mm-hmm. maybe they don't respect it well enough or don't understand how to, and either the land or the people in the land turns on them. Is that pretty much how it goes?
That's what I would consider. Yeah, absolutely.
So this one, I don't know what to call it then, because it's kind of the reverse. And this is about it's a rural, isolated little town, almost this village in just like rural New Hampshire or somewhere in New England. I shouldn't say the state because I have no idea. But it's this, you know, peaceful little town. Everyone knows everyone. They're very, very small and isolated. And, you know, they have really harsh winters up there, which is where this novel takes place. Did I say the name of it yet? It's The Auctioneer by Joan Sampson.
You did.
The Auctioneer. And it came out in the 80s, I think. And it kind of had a resurgence in popularity because people were just discovering it and how good it was. And it is really good. So this community, they have an outsider come to their town and fuck things up.
Ooh.
And it still feels folky in a way, you know, maybe in a tangential way, but it's very interesting. So this guy comes in and he's like, hey, he gets on, you know, the town council and everything like that. And he's like, we're having this auction because we need to raise money to make our police force stronger. And we got to make sure that they can really crack down. And so he starts raising all this money for them by, you know, items that people donate. But he gets just like into the town's DNA and he gets everyone on his side. And then he starts demanding things for the town auction. And it gets to the point where it's this, you know, this struggling family that live in this farmhouse with one of their elderly parents. And it's like it examines the pressure from within, and like within their family dynamic, they're starting to crack under this pressure of this force coming into their town and kind of becoming this totalitarian in a way, because he just has like the police force on his side and he's deputizing all these people, and it's really creepy.
Hmm.
Yeah, it's worth a read. It should be back in print now because it's gotten this like resurgence.
Right. So classics up next. I love your choice, by the way.
I wasn't sure about this one at first because it feels a little new. And, you know, you think of classics being like Frankenstein, Dracula, like you mentioned earlier. And this one came out in 1980, but it's such a good story that I feel like it's already cemented itself as a classic, at least within its subgenre, which would be the haunted house story. It's The Woman in Black by Susan Hill.
Oh, it's so good.
So good. And yes, it's the same story that the famous stage play and all the movies are based on. And the thing about The Woman in Black, like I said, it was published in 1980. But if you had told me that it was published in like 1912, I would have believed it. 100%. So Susan Hill set out to make a traditional English ghost story, you know, the classic way, which they used to tell these ghost stories on Christmas as a tradition. And that's exactly how this novel is framed. It's the narrator at the beginning on Christmas night, and he ends up writing this ghost story down for his family. And it's just such a classic homage that it's kind of brilliant that it was so good that it became part of the classics that it was playing on, in a way.
I saw the movie before I read the book, and I love the movie. I think it's there are parts of it that I don't love, but overall I think it's a great ghost movie.
Yeah.
And I remember reading the book and not looking at when it was when it had been written. And I had the same reaction where I was like, this feels like it was written, you know, 100 years ago, when in fact it was not. Yeah. So yeah, she absolutely definitely accomplished, I think, what she set out to do with that book.
Mm-hmm. And it's so well written. It's really short. It's, I think my copy is only like 130 pages, but it's really just well written and compact, and the scares are really great. And I remember the last two pages of the book were like some of the weirdest, creepiest ghost shit I've ever read. It was just like so well done. And for anyone who doesn't know, I'll just say roughly the plot. So it's about this man, Arthur Kipps. He's a young lawyer trying to get good in his firm. So he's talked into going on this trip to see to all this woman's paperwork that just died. And she lives in Eel Marsh House, which is the one that is like inaccessible at multiple times of the day because of the tide. And it's this really well-described house. Super creepy.
So we've talked about a couple of books where that's a theme, right? Where like you are cut off, like from the rest of the world by either a storm or by, in this case, the tide going out. And there's just something about that being so scary. And so it makes you so vulnerable that I think just works so well in horror novels.
And it's also like kind of a fun trope, like with the Carol Hunt, when they're like cut off from leaving. Yeah. It's an easy way to answer the question of how can we make sure they just stay in the house instead of running out.
Exactly.
But it's like when it happens in the story, you're like, oh yeah, here we go.
Like, this is going to be delightful.
Well, what's yours?
Mine is The Exorcist by William Peter Blatty.
So good.
Oh, so good. If you've listened to the podcast outside of the Haunted Library episodes, you may know that The Exorcist is one of my top three horror movies of all time. Probably one of my top movies of all time.
Mine too.
And it is so true to the book, I feel like, that I don't know. I just love them both. So you have Chris McNeil, who is this actress. She's recently divorced, and she starts to have she goes to Washington to film a movie. And she takes her 11-year-old daughter, Reagan, with her. Reagan starts exhibiting some odd behaviors, as well as convulsions, and she's forgetting things, and it just escalates. Things just get very, very, very bad very, very quickly.
Yeah.
And it's set, I think, the movie is, and maybe I'm just thinking that this is as well, it's set around Halloween. Nobody knows what is going on with her. Like, Chris takes her to all these doctors. They can't figure out what's going on. And Chris, who is an atheist, but has, you know, kind of come in contact with some priests through her time in DC, she finds this priest and psychiatrist, Damien Karras, who she begs him to help her daughter. So it's really about this struggle of faith and these horrible things that are happening. And are they really happening? Are they not happening? Is it like psychological? And they end up bringing in an exorcist. And it's just such an incredible story.
So classic.
It's one of those books that I can't tell whether I like the book more or the movie, which says a lot, because generally it's always going to be the book.
Yeah.
But in this case, the movie is so true to the book, I feel like, that I find it hard to separate the two of them.
Yeah, same. I remember I was always a little nervous to read The Exorcist because the movie is so special that I was like, well, this might be disappointing in comparison. So I was just really pleasantly surprised that the movie owes a lot to the book for how good it is, because it's a great story.
It really is. It really is. And I feel like even if you're not a horror fan, which if you're not a horror fan, you're probably not listening to this, but even if you're not a horror fan, you can take something away from The Exorcist. It was just funny because it is the movie that I talked about being kind of the movie that I wouldn't watch for the longest time. Like, once I got into horror, I it was the one that I was like, I can't watch that. I can't watch it. And I think now I'm saying, oh, you should read The Exorcist if you're not a horror fan. It's fine. It's fine.
Yeah.
Younger audiences.
YA.
YA. So I picked Clown in a Cornfield by Adam.
I think he pronounces it Caesar.
Caesar, thank you. Which is just a fun riot of a book. Part 2 just came out. I have not read it yet. It is in my TBR cart, but it's not been read yet. Clown in a Cornfield is all about this girl, Quinn, who has just moved to this tiny town from a bigger city. I know they mentioned the city, but I can't think of which one it is. I want to say it's like Philadelphia, but I could be wrong. Her and her dad moved there because her mother has passed away and they want to just start over again. But this small town is in turmoil, really, because you have the adults who want to restore Kettle Springs to its previous glory. And then you have the kids who are just like, we just want to have fun. We want to get out. We want to like make these videos and, you know, be on TikTok. And so there's this divide in the town. And all of a sudden, people start seeing this clown, Friendo, appear, and he starts like killing people, kids specifically. And Friendo, I should mention, is the mascot of the old Bay Pen corn syrup factory that is shut down, which is one of the reasons why Kettle Springs is kind of in decline at the moment. But yeah, so Friendo is like killing people. And what is more fun than a killer clown in a small town killing kids?
Yeah. I thought you were going to rhyme that last line.
A killer clown. A killer clown in a small town messing around. There you go.
Yeah, it was a good book. I surprisingly enjoyed it. I was hesitant going in because it was a YA novel, but it was a lot of fun, kind of just, you know, in a slasher way.
Very much. And I think it does a few things. It takes a few unexpected turns that you don't expect it to take. And I enjoyed that a lot as well.
Yeah, me too. It was a lot of fun.
What about you? What was your YA pick?
Okay, so I picked, everyone probably knows it by now, Coraline by Neil Gaiman.
Yay!
I actually have not really gotten on board with Neil Gaiman's other books, but Coraline is a book that I did read as a child, which is weird to say. It actually came out in like 2002, so I think somehow I got my hands on it when I was really young. And reading it as an adult now, because I did read it recently for some reason, and it holds up really well. It's a good book. It's scary. And when I say it's scary, I mean, it's just like surprisingly, there's a lot there that he intentionally doesn't explain about like what's happening and where this, you know, creature comes from, what its overall goal is. A lot of it is just left in the dark, and that kind of makes everything a little surreal, bizarre. And it's just, it's a really short book. So again, it's one that you can just sit down and read in a day, which I used to do all the time because it was just so creepy.
That's the one thing Neil Gaiman does really well is, first of all, the fact that he is equally as talented, I think, writing stories for younger audiences as he is for writing stories for adults. And I feel like the stories for younger audiences are still accessible and appealing to adults. And he does that, I think, that kind of, I'm not going to tell you everything. I'm not going to explain everything. I'm going to make things kind of vague and scary and spooky and mysterious. And it's so good. I'm a huge Gaiman fan, so.
Oh, cool. Yeah, I think Tyler liked American Gods a lot. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Coraline is just so, it has some like classic elements too that are a lot of fun. Like, it somewhat rings of Alice in Wonderland at times, and then it takes a lot from The Thief of Always at other times. But I remember there's this one specific scene where Coraline is running back down through that magical hallway that connects like her apartment with the other apartment that's identical to hers. And she reaches her hand out in the darkness and touches the wall. But for some reason now it's suddenly like wet and hot, like the inside of a mouth. And then that never comes back again. It never gets explained. Why did that happen? And then there's other things where it's like, you know, the other mother is the villain of this book. But then when Coraline's in the hallway, it's like she suddenly knew there was something old and slow behind her in the hallway and it was coming. And it's like, well, that thing, whatever that was in the hallway, just never comes back. It's just off the wall. Crazy. Yeah. Good.
Oh, I love it. I love it.
Nonfiction is next, unless you had anything else to add about YA.
No, I do not. So okay. Nonfiction. Yeah. So what was your choice?
Well, I went with one of the few nonfiction books I've ever read that wasn't by Stephen King, but it was also a good book, and I was traumatized by it. And that is Small Sacrifices by, you know, the famous true crime writer Anne Rule. And I actually like Small Sacrifices better than the one that she's most known for, The Stranger Beside Me. That one is, you know, all about Ted Bundy and crazy lineup of coincidence that she happened to personally know him before he was caught.
Yeah.
I just can't believe that happened.
I know. It's so wild. And I think that's what made her famous, wasn't it? Was The Stranger Beside Me that made her famous?
I think so. Yeah. But I liked Small Sacrifices a bit more because it's just a weirder case that maybe not a lot of people know about. Well, maybe now since true crime has gone through its boom. But yeah, it was the story of Diane Downs, who was off the wall. I guess I'll say that again instead of trash it. She was this mother who was, she basically claimed that she was driving her car and a man stopped them, and then he shot her in the arm and then shot all of her children. And she really thought she was going to get away with that. And the book is a painstaking trip through everything that happened to those poor kids, and not just, you know, the crime, but what happened afterwards with, you know, their mother trying to get away with it and then becoming this media sensation. And it's a fascinating book. The case sounded so insane and very tense because Diane, mm-hmm. she was crazy, but she was also like very manipulative and smart.
Yeah.
And one detail I always remembered from the book and never forgot was that the prosecutor trying to, you know, put her away and prove her guilty for this crime, he was under so much stress that he started having tooth pain, and his dentist told him that he clenched his teeth so hard that he cracked his tooth down to the root. And I've just never forgot about that, because she writes it as good as a fiction novel. Like, it's so tense. Like, you're following this journey along, even though you could just read all about it on Wikipedia.
Yeah, I feel like that's the one thing that Anne Rule does so well, is that level of detail. I think, did you say painstakingly detailed? It's the perfect way to describe the way that she writes. And she is very... she's brutally honest, I feel like, about the crimes that she covers. But
yeah, methodical.
Methodical, yeah. And she's not like sugarcoating anything, and she's not being gratuitous, but she's very, yeah, very methodical and very detailed. Yeah. And she really allows you to see the crime from like so many different perspectives. And I think Small Sacrifices is a great book.
Yeah. No, it's not, it might not be saying much because I have a notoriously weak stomach and can't handle much of anything, but yeah, there were some descriptions of what happened to those children in the book that were so just medically traumatizing that I got like nauseous reading a couple times and just had to power through it.
Oof. So my choice kind of brings us full circle since we started talking about ghosts. Mine is called Ghostland: An American History in Haunted Places by Colin Dickey. And what it is about is basically Colin Dickey goes through the continental U.S. And he looks at some of the most famous haunted places in the United States. So like the most haunted mansion or the most haunted prison. But then what he does is he takes it and he looks at it from what does this tell us about American history? Uh-huh. And like, so for instance, you know, like when we're talking about haunted Indian burial grounds, and I'm like doing like the air quotes here, he talks about the guilt that is felt about certain places, and that kind of translates into these ghost stories. And he talks about, you know, like different things and how the story has changed over time, and what that means. And it's just really, really interesting because it's a very unique take on those. Here's some like haunted house stories, like true ghost stories. And instead of just saying like, here's the most haunted house in New York City, he talks about, you know, the history and then kind of, I want to say psychoanalyzes it, but that's not quite the right word, but he really he looks at it from a critical lens and talks about why this place has stood out and has been passed down through history as a haunted house. And it's just really, really, really interesting to see, you know, how these stories are created and how they carry on throughout history, I guess.
Yeah, that sounds cool. I copied down that whole description because that sounds like it was tailor-made for Tyler.
Oh, he would probably love it. Yes. Yeah.
He's like me. He doesn't really believe in ghosts or anything, but ghosts are just his like comfort topic, weirdly. Like whenever he just wants to chill, he'll put on those old like ghost TV shows from the early 2000s that were like reenactments of something that really happened. Mm-hmm. He puts those on all the time, and he also loves history and learning about places. So
it would be perfect for him. I feel like he would love it.
That sounds awesome.
Well, that covers all of our subgenres, but is there anything specific that you're really excited to read in October that we didn't talk about?
You know, my reading plate is full of Stephen King right now, so I got to figure out how to work some other authors in there.
Same.
That's something I need to work on, actually, because I usually am good because I do read a lot of Stephen King, and I always want to, I like to follow authors. So there's him, and I like to follow Bentley Little sometimes, and I'm usually good about working a more diverse reading list in there and breaking it up every now and then, but.
But why are you struggling right now with that, Ryan? Why are you so focused on Stephen King?
Well, because I may have started a new podcast about Stephen King and then also decided that I wanted to reread the Dark Tower series at the same time. why did I do that? And become an expert on it.
Yeah.
That's my goal.
Yeah. Well, tell us about this new podcast.
We did an episode, you did an episode for Scaredy Cats talking about the Castle Rock Book Club when it was a book club. So we've basically just taken all that useless, I have taken all that useless knowledge that I've accumulated, and I was like, well, we got to do something else with this. I mean, we can't just, you know, let it sit there. So yeah, we're going to go back through the books. Sherry has graciously agreed to join me in this insane journey. But we're going to go back through all the Castle Rock stories, plus the ones that maybe just mention it once or twice, and a couple that don't even mention it at all, but they're just good Stephen King books. And that's going to be what we do. We're going to break it down, make those connections and the overlaps really easy to understand, because a lot of new Stephen King readers I have discovered get a little overwhelmed with, like, where do I start? I don't want to, you know, accidentally read something out of order. And so, yeah, we're breaking it down.
We are. It's been a lot of fun so far. Now, our first episode won't be out until October, I think, right?
Sometime in October, yeah.
But stay tuned and you'll hear more about that.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, I'm excited to read some of these books that you've recommended that I haven't read yet.
Yeah, likewise.
And I'm excited to revisit some Shirley Jackson next month.
Oh yeah, The Haunting of Hill House. Hopefully we got some good recommendations out there, but it would probably be even better but worse for both of our wallets if maybe people send you their favorite fall cozy Halloween spooky reads.
Absolutely. So you can do that by letting us know on Twitter at @CatScaredy or on Instagram at @ScaredyCatsThePodcast. Where can people find you on social media?
Best place would be Twitter at RyanM642. I also have a website that's just my name, RyanMills.art, where I can, you can see all the illustrations that I've done for various books. I'm not too sure about the contact on my website right now, unfortunately. It gets a lot of spam, and now I feel like maybe some actual important emails could be getting blocked. Oh, no. So I would just recommend Twitter. That's usually where I put anything if I have it.
All right. Well, let us know what you're reading for fall. And if you've read any of our recommendations, let us know what you thought. Don't forget to subscribe wherever you find podcasts and let us know what you think by leaving us a review. Until next time, stay scared.